kisses of truth thou hast for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine.
Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And each week on this program, I explore the latest in a spiritual renaissance that's happening in this country and around the world. And tonight's show, I think we'll sort of do an overview of what's been happening with my guests. My first guest is a famous actress, Catherine Oxenberg. She's also a spiritual seeker, philanthropist, someone who's been really in touch with the spiritual happenings in this country for the last, I guess, 20 or so years. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, Alan. Thank you so much.
And you have a ongoing blog. Can you just tell people how to find you and your blog?
Yes. Right now I am posting the link on my Facebook account, which is Catherine Oxenberg, or they can look on your site. And hopefully you'll have a link. And it's CatherineOxenberg.wordpress.com. But it's so new that I might not even show up on Google yet.
Well, eventually it will, Catherine.
Hopefully.
But, no, I am really happy you're here on the program because we had a nice conversation the other day. And we kind of, I think both checked in together about where this sort of spiritual movement is going, and I think it is going places, but what you were saying and your awakening is that we don't need, and I agree, we don't need gurus. Mm-hmm. We don't need to follow blindly people who say they know better than us. Would you agree with that?
Oh my God, 100%. And I think that I was definitely a New Ager. And I grew up in a period of time where I rejected institutional religions, and I was always looking for answers. And I did go to a lot of gurus because I didn't like Western religion. I didn't like how women were represented, or I didn't like the absence of the feminine in the divine spectrum of Western religion. So I went to a lot of the Eastern religions. And it's unfortunate for me, because for many reasons. One, I was a long-time meditator, which I have to say is a practice that does not guarantee that you become a better person. And in fact, I don't know about you, but I know a lot of, and I've meditated for years, but I know a lot of, and this brings, I want to, don't let me forget to talk about transcendent versus embodied. A lot of meditators who are very, who have meditated for a very long time have an arrogance about them, and
which is ironic.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just saying that's ironic because that's the very antithesis of why people meditate. You know, I mean,
listen to me. A lot of people who meditate are very arrogant that they're meditators. Well, I'm a long-term meditator. Well, I meditate. I know some person who meditates 5 hours a day, and he's one of the nastiest, meanest people I've ever met in my life. So there's meditation itself as a practice does not guarantee that you are becoming, whether it's meant to dissolve the ego, it's not a guarantee. It really isn't.
Well, I don't think meditation is to guaranteeing anything. I think it's a great practice, though, for looking at your own mind, but it doesn't transcend the ego because, I mean, it could, but you come right back to yourself, but hopefully you come back to yourself in a more more perspective. Yes.
Yes, you would hope so, and you would hope that it would encourage a certain, well, for stress, it's great. It is excellent stress relief. But if you don't have other practices to support that, it's kind of self-indulgent.
If someone meditates for 5 hours a day and they're still nasty, I would say they are using meditation. They're using meditation to avoid living, avoid life.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I agree completely. And I know you wanted to talk about this whole issue of guru worship. So I did study with a lot of gurus. And I was really fascinated by the concept of an enlightened master and what that meant, and kind of a sucker for it, because I put anybody that I considered enlightened, and that meant anybody who had any kind of spiritual gift, anyone who could give Shaktipat, who could transfer a higher state of consciousness, who, when I was in their space, I felt bliss, all of those kind of transcendent experiences, I was like a moth to flame. I was looking to feel better, so I don't blame myself. But the amount of times I heard from every single one of these individuals, sort of an induced hypnosis that only through me can you find God, only tethered to me. I am the gateway. And listen, I reacted when I read in scripture that the Christians said that the way was through Christ. I'm like, come on. I mean, I really question everything. To me, the truth is I don't believe that there is any intermediary between us and our concept of the divine creative principle. I don't. I think
I agree with you. I totally agree. Yeah. And if someone says they are the intermediary, you know, like the Tao Te Ching says, run from people who say they have the truth and run to people say they're who are looking for it, like us. I mean, but you did have an awakening and it was just recently that you sort of had this realization, because when I met you, you were still sort of guru chasing.
I was, and I've done it for years. And then when it wasn't the traditional guru, it was these amazing teachers that told me that they were enlightened masters, or that other people considered were enlightened masters, and they had wisdom. They really did. But the more time I spent around them, the less clarity I had for myself. So I was almost like a junkie. I was a spiritual junkie. I would go, I would be in their space, I would feel bliss, and I would leave, and I would have less access to my own wisdom and clarity. And I started to think, am I just a moron? I couldn't figure out, like, what was wrong with me, why I was disintegrating around people who were supposed to be teachers. And, you know, it comes down to my highest nature is I am a profoundly devotional being. And I have to love that about myself. I am.
What do you mean by devotional? I'm not
okay,
sure.
I love God. I love God with every cell in my being. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I am here to be an expression of that love for God. And if I met somebody who I thought was closer to God or had, who was a more clear channel than I was, I wanted to honor that person. And so that would take the form of loving these teachers, unconditionally loving these teachers, and letting things fly that I shouldn't have, overlooking things. And this is the other thing. If I felt somebody was enlightened, I gave away my power.
Yeah.
It was almost like I was feeding my devotion. The downside is I'm naive.
Well, you're not naive, but you're also trusting, and you're also pretty honest and open person. And I do appreciate your honesty in this sort of self-reflection. But then what was it that just woke
that
you up out of this
place? Well, it's a combination. And by the way, yes, I'm open and trusting, and yes, I'm naive. So I need to take a look at both sides of myself, because if I only take a look at the upside, I'm going to be in greater danger for making the same mistake in the future. So I really have to call myself on my stuff. And what happened, and I think it was directly connected to my father dying, and I don't really, and it was the last teacher that I was working with. Something woke me up going through the process with my dad. And I remember very clearly thinking, okay, I've worked with this woman for a year. I really love her. The truth is, I don't think she loves me that as much as I love her. I feel like I've created a financial dependency, because I paid this woman a lot of money. It was expensive to go see her several hours a week or whatever. And so it's almost like you set up a financial codependency. Codependent. I'm a codependent spiritual person. There you go. This is genius. And so she said, so I was pulling away. I wasn't going every week. I was going once a month, and my excuse was my dad. I thought she'd buy it. And she said to me on the phone one day, I can feel you're becoming untethered from me. and I can't protect you. And all of a sudden, it was like I came out of a coma, and I went, that's evil. That is a wicked thing to say to another human being who is trying to find spiritual independence and find autonomy and grow up. And I realized, in order for me to become a spiritual grown-up, I couldn't hang on to a mommy anymore.
Well, it's manipulation, you know. It's total ego manipulation. Like she was in any position to protect you from anything. Like she didn't even, in my opinion, didn't even have that much power to protect anybody.
So, well, I know you happen to know who I'm talking about.
Right. So, and it's okay. A lot of them say that. You know, a lot of the gurus in India say that, you know.
Well, you expect it. I've had it from a million gurus in India.
Yeah.
You know, but from a Westerner, you go, come on. So I think it was
spiritual ego. Spiritual ego. And then, you know, so then you had this realization like, oh my God, who does this person think they are?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened with that for you?
Well, then I started to find my own way and find my own voice. And it wasn't until I cut every relationship with any teacher or anything that I finally found access to my own voice. And it's been an evolution of the past year, and I work a lot with the Tree of Life, interestingly enough.
Oh, yeah.
I work with that versus the chakra system, because what I'm finding for me as part of my own practice, I can only feel God in my body. It's not an esoteric thing for me. It's a visceral experience of the divine in my cells. When my cells are vibrating with love and light, and which is usually triggered by me talking about how much I love God or feeling how much I love, but usually talking about how much I love God, I start to be filled with this energy in my body. And so for me, what I love about the Tree of Life, and obviously I do a lot of other things, is that the way it's represented on the human body as the mind of God on the human body, it creates a more embodied activation than a linear chakra. And I've had a lot of experiences with Kundalini awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
you felt the Kundalini awakening
many times.
From teachers or on your own?
From teachers, both.
Okay. And what does that mean? I mean, I know what you mean, but what does that mean?
What does that feel like? Okay, so basically it means that you feel this creative energy awakening at the base of your spine, rushing up your spine, going through all the chakras and out the top of your head, and often it feels like showers of light pouring out your head.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, I have had those experiences. Or I've had gurus touch me on the third eye, and I've gone into like bliss for 3 days.
But the thing about that is people mistake that Shaktipat power for worship. So if someone does that to you, that means, you know, you have to worship them because they have some energy. But, you know, I was around a guru where all these people were going into bliss, and, you know, I felt something, but I just felt he was using that power for his ego. And
you are so right. And if I was going to ask you a question of what do you want in life more, if you had to choose one, would you choose ecstasy or would you choose connection?
Everyone who's a spiritual seeker should fill out a questionnaire with that question.
Well, I have the answer because at least I have my answer, finally.
No, it's connection, I think.
Yes, I want to be in connection with other human beings and experience intimacy, and I want to be in connection with God. And to be quite frank, one more bliss experience is the comparison of masturbating to making love.
Well, it's
I mean, to be
drug.
Really crude.
No, I appreciate you saying that, being a beautiful woman.
No, I want to make love. I'm sorry.
I do too. Okay, so let's forget about the radio show. No, I'm kidding.
Well, not with me, silly. I'm married, but with
No. But it is like Shaktipat experience can be just a drug if you're if you're depending on someone else to give that to you, I mean, it can be a window, like a drug experience, into higher realities. But if you're not getting there on your own, then you are just masturbating.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt you, because how many gurus have you been around? And you look at the people who are around these gurus, and the gurus may be enlightened, and some may be avatars. No one around them is enlightened.
Exactly.
Nobody.
And not only that, another big point is all those gurus who are enlightened didn't get there pretty much by following a guru.
No, they did not.
And that's the joke about the following a guru to be enlightened. It doesn't really work.
Or any practice. You know, I really am at the point that anything that we use as a practice, eventually we have to dismantle it. Because any structure, and I'm not talking about the Tree of Life, because that's literally like energy, opening energy centers, but eventually you question anything that creates a structure. And it can be, like you say, a launching pad, but the structure itself never takes you to God, ever. Because the living, holy presence of God cannot live within a structure.
Well, but and also the joke is we are already in the presence of God, as I define God. I mean, I'm interested, when you say you love God, what is God to you?
Well, God is, it depends what mood I'm in. Right now, like I said to you the other day, I am having a love affair with the aspect of God that I term the Father. Mm. And I've always had a relationship with God the Mother, the Divine Feminine, and I've sought it out through female teachers and female gurus, and I just have a profound devotion to God the Feminine and God the Mother. But since my dad passed, who I had a very, very difficult relationship with, I asked him when he was dying, I said, be my bridge to heaven. And since he died, and when I say the Our Father, well, I say my beloved Father who is in heaven, I literally feel this relationship with an aspect of God that I have never been able to touch before. And it's this benevolence, and it's the feeling of being the special daughter to God. And feeling that I am helplessly in love with God, my Father. Helplessly. That's the only way I can describe it. And that I would do anything for my Father. And so it's just the vibration of that aspect of the infinite that I'm having a relationship at this particular moment. But it has opened so many gateways for me that I couldn't reach through just my relationship with God the Mother.
But how is that those terms or aspects incorporated in you? Because there is, I mean, my opinion is all that we know of God is an aspect of the divine spark within us. So
I don't know. For me, aspects of God's have different aspects of God, for me personally, vibrationally, they have different personalities.
But they're like, not separate from you, are they?
No, I mean, no. It's
outside
like
outside of you?
I'll give you an example. When I'm telling you that I love my Father, I love God the Father, right? We can call it any term, you know. When I tell you that I love God, I have been in a state where literally I became that love, and I knew that I was no longer Catherine Oxenberg. I only existed as an expression of the embodiment of love for God. That was it. And that was all that I could think. It's the only thing that could come out of my mouth, like I was reduced to a few words, was, God, I love you so much. I just love you with every fiber of my being. There wasn't anything, I couldn't express myself more eloquently. And then what happened to me is I literally felt like I was birthing my love through me. And you're a guy, so you've never had this, but when you are giving birth, you bear down. So it's not an enlightened Shakti part where the light goes up. It's literally like this, I've never felt this intense love that felt like it was birthing down through me onto the planet through my body.
And has
but
that stayed?
I swear, I was.
I believe you were giving birth to God.
Yes, I was giving birth to God through me and as me.
But has it stayed with you, that experience, or did it come and go?
No, all I have to do is talk about it, and I'm right back there. And then the level of creativity that's come through and clarity, and I birthed my voice through love, through my love for God. And I mean, it's like I'm listening to myself going, crazy person, but I can't help myself.
No, I don't think it's crazy. I think that's just a part of us that still judges ourselves. But no, it sounds like you did have an awakening, and you talk about an awakening in yourself, and staying in that place and living that reality is valuable for everybody around you. Are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm with you because I outlived my phone, and I've now changed phones.
Okay. No, but that's good. But it sounds like from what you're saying and what I'm feeling you're much more confident and solid in yourself, that there's been a big shift in your reality about who you are and your connection.
I would say so, because when you came up to me the day that I met you and you said, I want to talk to you, I'm like, what about?
And it was about this. It was really... Yeah. Because I did see that you had it more together than that person that you were sitting around.
Oh, you're so sweet. All right, so I'm going to tell you one piece that happened before I birthed this love as God for God.
Yeah.
I was discussing this part of me that was this visceral panic that I always had in my solar plexus with somebody. And I was saying, you know, I feel like with all the work that I've done for the past 40-odd years in my life to try and get rid of or heal or integrate these feelings of panic and terror and whatever that are in my solar plexus that I feel are related to my sexual abuse, because I was abused when I was very tiny.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found myself, as I was talking to this woman, I went back for the fifth millionth time to the room where I was abused. And this time, I saw something different. Right before I was abused, I saw that I was connected to a column of light, like liquid crystal light, and I was disconnected right before I was abused. And I don't know if I can explain this to you or if it won't make sense.
No, it's making sense.
In the moment that I saw that light, I realized, and then I saw it being disconnected, and I felt the sensations in my body, I went, oh my God, this isn't abuse that I've been feeling my whole life. It is the terror of being disconnected to your source of light and not knowing how to reconnect. And that sense of falling into oblivion, or my problems with depression, or my all of that, I realize I'm organized not around, the core of me is not this abuse that I'm trying to manage and control and suppress and heal and like that I'm enslaved to, but I'm organized around my relationship to the light and knowing that I'm not connected to the light. And that was the beginning of my awakening.
That is a beautiful way of putting it. I get it. And in a way, it's like the hero's journey. You maybe needed that disconnection in order to know that you are now solidly connected again. You found this, you've come full circle with wisdom. And
well, thank you, Alan. Thank you so much. Well, what I felt was that, and this is what I identified when I went back to that place of abuse, is that now the gateway that was my gateway to hell has become my gateway to heaven. And I go back there every day to find that light, that connection to light. And now the room that I avoided is so full of light that it's obliterated that story of having been abused. Like that little girl that was abused and so identified with, that room is bathed in light.
Wow. I bet you can help other women and people who've had similar situations. I mean, I do know some people I'd love for you to talk to at some point, because, and it's not to follow you and make you another guru. It's
That could never happen.
Well, but it does. I'm not saying it happens to you, but it does happen. Or someone would make you a guru. Even if you didn't want to be the guru, someone would come to you and start to do that to you. But anyway, we're not talking about that. I think your pathway can really help others.
Well, thank you, Alan. But I got to tell you, I don't think it's going to happen with me, because if I can wake up, everyone can wake up. And it means that if I've woken up, everyone is waking up. Because I was like the most broken person on the planet, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, and but you know what you had, Kat? You had a will and drive, and you were seeking this, and it came in an unexpected way, of course, but you never settled, and I think that's what's unusual about you in that way.
Well, thank you. Do you have time for me to say one other thing about
this
whole process?
Yes, let's do another 5 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, because I think people, if they're listening, are going to get this whole concept when I talk about it. What I found is that we have our authentic self and we have a false self. And I call that the pain body. And I'm not unique. I know Eckhart Tolle and other people have referred to the pain body. But what I've identified with that pain body is that it has a heart. It has what I call the shadow heart, mm-hmm. and which was created, which was birthed at the moment of a defining incident in one's life that was so painful that we disconnected from light, which is what happened to me. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, it's like the false self was able to assemble and then create an orbit around it where all painful traumatic experiences were able to attach, because it was almost like a vibrational reciprocity, and form a false self. And now I realize anytime I was walking into a cocktail party or around people, it was my pain body bouncing off other people's pain body, constantly absorbing each other's pain, which is why it was, if you don't drink and you don't use, you don't smoke, it's really painful to be around a lot of people for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And especially if you're somebody, you know, people say to you, oh God, I feel so good around you. Well, yeah, because you're sucking up all their crap without even knowing you're doing this. So now that I found that this false self has a heart, when I went to the heart of my own darkness and consumed it and transmuted it, behind it was the heart of the divine and the heart of my relationship to the divine. And so I have, just by talking about it and telling other people, and guiding other people to this, they do it themselves. And then they find exactly the moment where they were disconnected from their column of light or their pillar of light, or my daughter calls it the river of light. And I found that people who were not abused, they're never disconnected. So it's
well,
a lot easier
something,
for my kids.
Something may, some trauma, I think we all have traumas. It may not be abuse, but there's something usually that comes that disconnects us from mm-hmm. some level of bliss that wakes us up, that puts us on the journey, you know, mm-hmm. so we can get back there. I think the ones in a way that are never disconnected reunite. And some people, of course, mm-hmm. become alcoholics and never find that, or whatever, drugs or whatever, addictions or things, like most of the world, you know, we've all born with that connection to the light, except, mm-hmm. You know, at this point, I think there's an awakening happening and we're realizing this, that we can return.
Well, I agree. And I think it's because we have there's more light on the planet. That's why we can actually access this.
But what were you saying about incarnating or embodiment? Is this what you meant by embodiment in the beginning of the...
Yes, because a transcendent experience is a blissful experience that takes you out of your body to the divine. And for me, it's the opposite. I'm having it's a transcendent experience, but it's not, I'm not absent. So it's actually coming through me. So instead of going up my spine, it's coming down through the top of my head, which is very tree of life, because you activate from the top. And I'm birthing this love for God through me down into my body, down to my toes and out my feet. So it's the actual opposite way. Does that make sense?
It does totally. No, everything you're saying makes sense. And I really want to acknowledge you as I am not making you into a guru, but as a teacher of someone who's really been on the path and who knows the pitfalls of being on a path. You know that joke, there's a seeker born every minute. And we've all been seekers, and but now I think we're finding. I mean, I'm happy that, I mean, you've had to do everything you did in order to get where you are in a way. You know, everything that happened to you has gotten you to this place of transcendence, and it is really a beautiful place. So thank you for sharing it.
You're so sweet. Well, just on a closing note, there are no more teachers anymore, and there is no hierarchy. We're all teachers and we're all students and we're all leapfrogging consciousness off each other. And that's the way it's supposed to be right now.
Well, it is supposed to be that. And I've learned something from you and maybe you've learned something from me or somebody else. And I think by honoring each other, then we bring the whole planet to this new level of awakening, because it's very Piscean age to put someone up on a pedestal, because you just have to knock them down if they've been up on a pedestal.
That was the Piscean age. And by the way, I want to thank you for honoring me, for recognizing aspects of me that I was not even conscious of before I could. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot of work, and you have, and I think just acknowledging yourself is also something we all have to do, acknowledge ourselves, because we we're a collective community of let's say spiritual beings evolving together, and we're reflecting each other, and those that are still seeking something outside themselves will not evolve into this new age, if we want to call it that. I mean, and it's okay. But the light that's coming in, that's coming down your spine, and a lot of people awakening them, is something new. And I think it's something that we need to be open for receiving. And it's very, very exciting. So thank you, Catherine.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been such a pleasure, Alan. Thank you for asking me to do this.
Yeah, let's do it again. And actually, next time you can talk a little, you can maybe do a little Tree of Life meditation.
Oh my God, I would love that. You know what you could put up on your website? The picture of the Tree of Life with all the different spherots and their representations, what they represent vibrationally. Mm-hmm. And then I can talk people through it and they can have a visual of it too.
Great. No, let's do
That's
that
a great
in a few
idea.
Weeks. We'll
okay,
do that.
Lovely. Thank you. All right, Chica. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'll let you know when this is up on the website, but you can also find Catherine's new blog at catherineoxenberg.wordpress.com.
Catherine, and if that doesn't work, go to Catherine Oxenberg Facebook and that will link you.
Okay, great. And of course,
thank you, Alan.
Thank you for everything you're doing and being, a pioneer, a warrior for truth, if you want to call it that.
Well, thank you. I think you are too.
Okay, we'll be in touch. Lots of love.
All right, darling. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Okay, that was Catherine Oxenberg, who's a well-known actress, but who really is interested in pursuing this kind of truth, this kind of self-realization. And like she said, if she can do it, anyone can do it. And right now,
I
I'm back here on New Realities with Jeremy Vaney, who's going to really sort of continue the conversation we had with Catherine Oxenberg. And Jeremy's written a book called Urgency, and we were talking about the end of the age of gurus and this time of falling back on ourselves as the source of our own knowledge. And what were you saying about that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I was saying that it is up to us. It's always been up to us. And I was saying I'm not certain if we ever needed that age of gurus, but maybe we did. But whatever the case is, we're here now where we are, and we can hear it, I think, better. I think we can hear that, well, sort of the truth is found within, if you want to say that, that it's not about projecting your hopes and desires onto a guru or onto a god or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But with that comes the caution of also not wanting to sort of usurp my experiences or your last guest's experiences. You know, don't make story time out of our experiences and then try to emulate them or want for them. Just sort of, there are no teachers, in other words, and there are no things that you can desire and attain that are from another person's experience. So it's just sort of listen and whatever makes sense, you know, take to heart.
Yeah, but like I was saying before we were cut off, is that you've had an awakening of sorts, just like Catherine, and this is what people are after, and you can't blame them for wanting to go and seek out people who will give them what you guys have got. Right.
Yes, that is correct. The irony is that the final lesson of seeking, mm-hmm, is don't seek. You know, it's a paradox. It takes somebody to want to seek. It takes a seeker to get to a stage where they can hear the message, don't seek.
Right. I think that's big. So we keep seeking. Well, I think it's good to have a perspective. I'm going to seek, but I'm not going to take my seeking in a way seriously, because I don't want to make that a guru type bhakti allegiance to anyone who's going to take me out of myself. But I think we have to keep seeking, but not be devotees in that, you know?
Well, I guess it depends on what it is that you're seeking. I mean, some people are seeking an effect, right? But if there's somebody who's just purely seeking the truth, whatever that means, the truth, the only way to access truth is a living thing, and the only way to access the, let's say, the self-awareness of truth is to become the self-awareness of truth, and the only way to do that is to dissolve. Mm-hmm. That's the wall that you come up with as a seeker is, you know, just be. Stop doing and just be. And in that moment of silence, is an aliveness that becomes you.
So what happened to you? I mean, how did you get to that point? Not that you were a big seeker. I never saw you at all the guru conventions. So, you know.
Yeah.
What happened to you?
Well, originally, I read a bunch of Jiddu Krishnamurti books because I had read some Ken Wilber books. And Ken Wilber said he cut his teeth on Krishnamurti. So I set out to discover who that guy was, because Ken Wilber seemed pretty smart. Mm-hmm. And I just got it, you know, I just completely got what he said, why he said it, and why, you know, he lamented on his deathbed, nobody understood what he was saying. And then in that moment, I mean, basically I just put the book down and realized, you know, this book, reading these books and trying to get it is still me, getting in the way. So I just stopped. I just put the book down. I stopped. And in that moment, there was, you know, thought ceased and an energy sort of, I guess, welled up or entered, I'm not sure which, from the lower spine. And my head started rotating like, you know, like doing an exercise, not like, you know, The Exorcist. And so this Kundalini activation, essentially, or Nam or Chi, you know, whatever word you want to put on there, came alive in the body. So it was this other energy moving the body around, not me doing it, which feels completely natural when it's happening. But then when you think about it after, it's like, well, you know, what do I have to compare it to? Because like you said, I'm not much of a seeker. And so the only thing I've got is what my culture tells me, which is possession. So when you think about it, it's kind of troubling. But then when you're actually in the moment of it, it's completely natural and feels great.
Right. So
and basically,
it stay yeah. with you though? Did it just stay that experience? That something?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still with me now. You know, all I have to do is shut up for 5 seconds, and it takes over, and it starts doing things I don't understand. You know, whirling dervish twirls and Tai Chi looking movements and all sorts of, you know, exercises and things like that.
When did this happen? I'm because I've known you a couple of years, and when did this actually begin for you?
I think the initial thing was in 2000, late 2000 or early 2001, because I was writing a book. I was writing I Know Why the Aliens Don't Land, right? Which right. was about, you know, ostensibly alien abduction. And I didn't know what to do with this, so I just left it out of the book. It was new. As I was writing it, it was just completely new to me. So I was like, you know, how many claims can you make about yourself, you know, in one lifetime that
or in one book for that matter, right?
Well, right, or one book. So I didn't know what to do with it, so I just left it out. And it grew and grew. And then this other energy that I've only experienced three times came into me, or whatever. Basically, it feels like a slit opens at the base of the spine, and you're flooded with beating energy. It's like you're levitating on this blissful energy from head to toe. Mm. And the first time I felt this, it just came in, it did that, it went away. I felt the slit close. It feels like a surgical precision to it. So you don't really want to move around or anything, you know, you don't want to screw it up, whatever it is. So it just came in, it did that, it went out. The second time, there was a possession. I don't know how else to describe it. Blissful energy came in, and on that rode in some sort of gargoyle red looking demonic thing. I wouldn't say demonic in the sense that I didn't feel any evil or anything like that coming from it, but I could see it physically superimposed over me. I could feel it gnashing my teeth, and I could, you know, think its limited thoughts, which were just that it was basking in the glow of being alive in this body for the few seconds it had. So I felt this, I saw this, then it flooded back out, slit closed up, go on with life.
Wait, and then there wasn't any residue from that? It was like, oh, that was interesting. Was that all, or did something?
Well, no, I mean, I was going through, at this point, I was going through psychic awakenings and all sorts of stuff. And I guess sort of taking Judo Krishnamurti to heart, I didn't stop in any of it. I didn't rest to make that my new stage on which I act. You know, I didn't become a psychic. So, you know, it was interesting, but I wanted to see, you know, what's next. I don't want to rest anywhere and explore these things. I want to know what's the, you know, what is this? What's the ultimate thing that this is going to? And then that happened. And then finally I had the big I am experience, which was the third time this thing opened up. Mm-hmm. Bliss energy pours in, and I leave with it. And in that moment, there's nothingness, which is a timeless moment. You know, it's nothing is nothing. And then, it's after that timeless moment, time happens. And so there's a visual, and I am the visual. So I'm seeing a visual, and I'm identifying myself as a visual. Mm. And the visual is of almost like a clear circle of maybe water, just clarity, a clear circle over black expanding. And I can feel the elasticity of it in my brain. So the moment that I become conscious and I start, you know, re-identifying or identifying as this visual, I'm also identified back with my brain. So even though I left my body through this slit, now I'm identifying with my brain again. And I think basically what's happening there is I went out of locality, which is my body, into non-locality. And once you're non-local, you're everywhere. And one of those places that you are is right back in your body. So it's kind of another mind screw. Well, in any event, so I'm watching this, and I am this, and I'm feeling it in my brain, and I feel like it's going to snap, and I'm going to die. I feel like I'm having an aneurysm or something. I'm going to die. It does snap. This clarity does finally snap, but I don't die. Instead, I see this blip of light, and from the light, pew, the universe. Just, you know, almost, you know, I guess the Big Bang or something.
Wow.
And now I'm seeing this, and I am this. So I'm seeing these planets, and I am these planets. I'm seeing this hot rock hurling through space, and I am this hot rock, you know. It's all of this I am identity with everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, it was fascinating, you know.
When did that happen recently?
When did that happen? I think 2004.
Oh, I knew you since then. You haven't really shared this. I guess you had to write the book first or something.
No, I think we might have talked about it.
I didn't realize it was that intense. So, because now you've written this other book, which keeps expanding upon those experiences.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, part of what happens, I mean, ultimately, the way I make sense of all of this is that what I experienced there as a state of mind, which was God self or union with, you know, universal intelligence, whatever word you want to put on there, I think that that is a stage that we live on. I don't think that's just a state that you can visit. I think that's ultimately our destiny. And so what this Kundalini energy is doing is making you as healthy as possible when you step aside and let it take over. It's making you as healthy as possible for that to be the stage upon which you live. Mm-hmm. Part of that cleaning out isn't just exercise, isn't just turning on, you know, psychic abilities or whatever has been turned off in your brain or broken all these years. Part of it is intellectual, in the form of insights into the human condition. And so, you know, I was flooded with insights and I jotted them down and I, you know, put them in a book. Because my hope is, you know, now that we're sort of this sort of rationalist, reductionist society, maybe you need somebody to step forward and go, okay, here's what it is. here's the ending to Lost, right? Here's all the big secrets to that you think are unanswerable, and here's why you think they're unanswerable, blah, blah, blah.
What is the urgency? Why do you call your book Urgency? What is it?
Well, because I think it's time to move on. I think if you put all of that stuff out there and you give the brain nowhere left to squirm, then maybe it shuts up. You know, maybe then we move on to the next set of questions, which comes with the new mind. And I think it's urgent because I don't think we have a hell of a lot of time, do you?
Well, but what are those new questions? And obviously, somehow you've tapped into a new mind. So give us the way. Show us, like, where you're looking.
Well, again, all it was getting that I'm not going to get it with no, you know, you can't have a preconceived notion of what this next thing is, or else that's self-fulfilling prophecy.
But beyond that, collectively, socially, where, you know, okay, we're not going to get it, and then you wake up, and I know, and many people, like this woman I was just talking to, you're both pretty regular people in your own way, you know, and you've had these, you know, what someone would say, like 40 years in a cave to have, you know, but in the last stage, you've just had them, right. You know, I don't know, just in your own homes and
in a man cave.
But it's pretty amazing. So, I mean, this is a plan. I mean, I don't see you and this woman, Catherine, as isolated incidences. I see this as a kind of epidemic? No, I would see it sort of something happening collectively that's very exciting.
Oh, good. I hope so. And I want to throw out there for any of the other people who've had this experience, not to get a messianic complex, not to feel as though you're special, and not to think that you have a message for the world, because, you know, those times are over.
Well, okay. But, you know, it was sort of grace that did awaken or happen to you with this other, I mean, hard work, intense seeking and questioning, which I think you both had, and then bam, something happens and there you are, which is great. And I don't know, what are the new questions then? Okay, let's get on to, okay, let's say everyone's in that state, where do we go?
Well that is the question, isn't it? I mean, so let's say that now you're a non-local being. What does that mean? What does it mean that your perception can be everywhere at the same time? What does it mean that you understand that your one consciousness experiencing itself as, you know, divisions? I don't know. I mean, we'd have to live there to find out.
Well, maybe.
So,
well, you are living.
It'd be disingenuous to answer that. I just think it's time to get there. And the way you do that is get over yourself, essentially.
But you are there, is what you're sort of saying, which is okay.
No, I'm not. I actually, when I came out of the experience, I, you know, this is going to sound stupid and dramatic, but I knew I had a choice. It was like, okay, I can go live there, I can live on that stage, or I can come back and write about it. And I thought, well, you know, I'll come back and write about it, and then once this book is done, then we'll see what happens. So I'm not there. I'm actually probably a grand hypocrite. I mean,
Well,
like you said, I'm a fairly normal guy, and, you know, my crap stinks by choice.
Well, let's say you made a choice to be there. Could you make a choice right now to be there? Or is it?
Yeah, I think I am. I think I am putting it off.
Well, what are you putting off? Just bliss.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's this fear of the unknown. It's like, you know, it's sort of what Terrence McKenna said. You know, if you want to be the crazy old guy with a long beard and, you know, sitting on top of a mountain, go be that guy. But can you have both? Can you have the mind of that guy and still live in society?
Well, yeah, you can, because that's why I'm doing this show, Jeremy. These are new realities. No, I'm serious, because I think you can have the mind of this guy, and I think we all can have the mind of that master and create something new, unknown, out of that together collectively, which I think is the human destiny, instead of being enslaved to hypocrisy and dogma. This is it. This is our chant. I mean, this is...
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, I know what my gifts are as far as communication goes, and I don't know if I would have them if I were of this other mind. I might. I might be just as good, or, you know, maybe have the same facade as I do now, but I didn't want to take the chance, you know? I didn't want to risk it.
Well, try it. Can you take the chance?
Well, I will.
Go
I will.
For it,
I mean, don't be surprised if you know, if I disappear by the end of the year, Alan.
Well, you might disappear, or it's like it does. It's. I mean, I know what you're saying, and I know what the hesitancy is, but isn't that what the urgency is as well? I mean, you know.
Yes.
So it's like maybe you wrote this book for yourself, huh?
No. Well, no. I mean, I wrote this book for everyone, and then as I said, you know, I am gonna take my own advice, if that's what you're saying.
Well, yeah.
Like I said, I am a grand hypocrite right now. I'm in a state of complete hypocrisy. But
well, how will you take your own advice? What is it that if you were to tell others and yourself, what is it that you would do?
I would shut up. I would be completely silent and see where that goes.
Well,
right now, when I go silent, it's not like, you know, people can sit still and all that. I can't do that. Like I go silent and this other energy takes over. So I think I would, you know, let it do what it needs to do to prepare me and, you know, do the hard work of making way for this new consciousness.
Or maybe it won't be hard work. Maybe it'll be the easiest thing you've ever done.
Yeah. No, it can be tough in some sense.
Well,
and certainly, you know me. Like, I don't know, you know, people out there don't know me, but, you know, I'm pretty out of shape, Alan. And a lot of what this thing does is exercise. So that's tough, you know.
But you see, this is the very thing that people are up against in the Piscean age. I mean, which is the human versus the divine. And it's, you know, it's never easy to give up our habits of being. The human habits for something greater. But Jeremy, it's up to you.
I see that we're out of time.
Well, just about. I mean, just about. But I mean, I just encourage you. And if you need a friend to hold your hand, you can always call me.
Oh, Alan, that's so sweet.
No. But I do think you're onto something. And I do think we can support each other in these movements into the unknown, to new directions. And I think at least you've touched it, you know, and I think that's what community or Sangha was about, is the fact that not to worship a guru, but to move collectively together and reference each other in these newfound ways. And it is new. I think what's happening to you and the former guest and other people is new. It's like there's an energy coming into the planet that's assisting us at this time. And I'm feeling something too. And I think it's exciting. So don't get too down on yourself for being a hypocrite.
Oh, no. I'm gloriously a hypocrite. Don't worry. I'm not too down on myself. But, you know, I would be remiss if my book didn't, you know, I don't know, foster something in at least one person out there.
Well, how do we find your book?
You can go to Amazon.com.
Okay.
And there it will be.
Urgency by Jeremy Vaney. Do you have a website?
Yeah, actually, paratopia.net is where everyone can find me.
How do you spell paratopia?
P-A-R-A-T-O-P-I-A.
Okay, and you also do a radio show. You want to just give yourself a little plug?
Yeah, well, the radio show is Paratopia, which I co-host with Jeff Ritzman, and we deal with all things consciousness, paranormal, UFOs, all of that fun stuff, but we do it. Well, you know, I have a sense of humor and all, as you know, Alan, but we tend to not just let any old person on the show. So it's usually deep discussion wrapped in humor.
Well, maybe I should be a guest again.
Like I said, not any old person on the show.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Sorry, it's a joke.
Okay. All right. I won't take it personally. That's just
you
my
know it's
ego.
A joke. It's a joke.
You're challenging my ego. I know. You're such a great teacher.
Yes, I'm a guru.
Will you be my guru? Anyway, thank you, Jeremy Vaney. Let's do it again sometime after I'm on your show, of course. But thanks. And I guess they'll be hearing from you. It's time to make the circuits and talk about the urgency, isn't it?
It is. It is. I'll be teaching at the Learning Annex later in May, so look for that.
Okay. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. I've been talking to Jeremy Vaney and Catherine Oxenberg. If you want to reach me, go to my website, newrealities.com. And this, I'll end with this song for us, Jeremy. How's that, Jeremy?
That's glorious.
I love this song. He's talking to our people. I do think the ETs fit into this awakening as well.